Hello everybody, my name is Mahmoud, and this is Mahmoud's Gadget Talk for Monday, 10th of August, 2020. Finally, a Monday episode. Yeah, we're back to the Monday and Wednesday grind, as I said last week, after probably the dry spell of no additional episode last week and the week before. But finally, we have a new episode. Let's get right into it. There's so much to talk about. And there's a new Pixel 4a. What is Huawei up to? What else? What's up with TikTok? So without further ado, let's get straight into the podcast with the Pixel 4a. A lot of help for us. Let's get right into it. So the thing about the Pixel 4a, now before I start talking about the Pixel 4a, I really want to straight off the bat say that given for the money, this is a really great affordable phone. It's got stock Android. It's got it's got a good camera. Basically, it's a good cheap smartphone if you live in the US, the UK, you know, you live in Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Germany, France, Italy, Poland. If you live in Europe, in Western Europe or North America, this is a great affordable phone. For the rest of the world, yes, including India. I mean, Google Pixels are sold in India also because, you know, you got to get in it's a pretty big market. Over there, what I've heard is it's not a great value, really. We have other affordable options. In other countries, really, this is why I want to bring up the point here. In other regions, it's not much of a great value. I mean, you could get a Oppo or Vivo for this kind of money, but the problem is, obviously, that an Oppo, Vivo, Xiaomi, Redmi, Infinix, Techno, and that's only in a few countries, but it's still a significant brand. Motorola, I mean, it's not available in the West, it's not available in the United States, so Google's has pretty much brought an affordable option really to the table, a powerful, affordable option to the table. And what you're getting really good stuff for the money, so yeah, that's what I wanted to note. So if I say go buy it, you'll probably be living in the US and stuff, because in the US, obviously, not many Chinese phones are available yet on the market. It's going to take a lot of time, and obviously, given what's going on, it's going to be a while before you see a Redmi 9 or Redmi 10X on the shelves at Best Buy or even on Amazon. It'll probably be on Amazon because people buy online a lot, and given how a lot of Chinese brands have utilized e-commerce and have grown their US business in mainly through Amazon and stuff, so it's going to take a while. So, yeah. So the Google Pixel 4a has a punch hole screen on the front. It's got this kind of polycarbonate plastic. It's got this matte plastic back. Typical Google design, sort of a single camera, sort of a squinky little single camera with a flash on the top left of it. Basically, the advantage, it's a phone made by Google, pretty much. It has... the software is really nice. You get pure vanilla Android Pixel skin, essentially. It's clean. And you get some Pixel-exclusive features. I was going to come to that software part because software matters a lot in these phones. Let's face it. I think the thing you interact the most on a mobile phone, on a smartphone, really, any smartphone, is software. I'm just getting to the product page of the Pixel 4a. I mean, it's really, really cute. You got a lot of the Pixel exclusive features for Google Assistant. So that's, let me get to this one. So you get robocall filtering, so call screen. So it'll let you filter out robocalls. That's only on the Pixels, really. And you get live dictation, sort of, and transcription. So essentially you get whatever you're listening to, really. Whatever video you're watching, you get live subtitles, sort of, because Google has chipsets with their Pixel phones, and it can render, and it's onboard its AI, sort of, onto the software, so it'll, combining that, it can render live subtitles in real time, sort of. You say a transcription, really, and that can only be done on the Pixel phones. And obviously, Google has their Titan M chip. Cannot forget to mention that. The Titan M chip, sort of, you can just put your passwords and stuff on it. Basically, a lot of googly features you get on a Google phone. Get it? But the camera, though, moving on, the camera is amazing. It's just a single sensor. Yeah, you could take extraordinary pictures that look like a camera off a $1,000 phone, basically. So it has HDR plus and Chris sharps up the colors and stuff. You get night sight and it looks crystal clear. I mean, it also has the star mo starry mode. I don't know what it's called. It has a stargazing mode, I think. Starry mode. There's a mode on the Pixel phones where you could put your phone tight against the sky and take and spend and just keep it there for a few minutes, and then it gives you this long exposure shot showing you the stars, sort of. It looks amazing, pretty much. And then there's Night Sight, Google's Night Sight, that's basically on more expensive Pixel phones. That's coming to the that's has come to the over to the 4A, and it looks nice. The thing is, it's just a single sensor, and it's the same sensor that has been used for a couple of years now on other previous Pixel phones. They're continuing to use it for the 4A, which means that actually, I would one thing I'd want to bring up here. I'm probably breaking up here, but. Is that the sensor is not really that new or advanced, or 108 megapixels or 64 megapixels. It's a simple. Let me bring up the resolution here. Hang on. Right. 12 megapixel camera, 1.4 micrometer pixel width. It just has autofocus and OIS and EIS OIS, and has an f/1.7 aperture, and also has a. Front, it's even got a punch hole front camera. And the thing is, the camera sort of actually, it's more about the software. Google does software processing, and so the whatever you get from the camera, the result, the quality would be crystal clear. You're able to get crispy shots, that's lovely. And you have a 3,140 milliamp hour battery, not really that big when you have phones with 5,000 milliamp hour batteries from lots of brands, really. I mean, I don't have to bring that up, you won't understand it. But the bigger deal is fast charging. The Pixel 4a has 18 watt fast charging with USB Power Delivery 2.0, which is really, really fast. And it has a Type C port for the money, for the budget. It's not really a big deal anymore because a lot of brands offer USB Type C ports at this price. I mean, look at it's actually fairly priced. I mean, if you start to look at it compared to the aggressive options from the Chinese phone makers, you know, head to head, it's really on l almost on par, almost really good as those phones. I mean, this could take a good beating with those. If priced well, then in emerging markets, this could take on the Chinese phone makers, you know, as a well-priced phone. It has a Snapdragon 730, good mid-ranger, and 6 gigabytes of RAM, 120 gigabytes of storage. Really solid option, really. You're not missing out. You're not cutting that many corners, really. And you have 5.5-inch display. If you think about it, if you think hard enough for the spec sheet, just look at the spec sheet alone, and you get clean, you get vanilla Android, really. Clean Android. No skins, no bloat. It's much faster. And obviously, it saves a lot of battery life, theoretically. That more efficient chipset, compared with a. With not so massive screen, sort of. Let's see. It's just a 1080p display. It's actually solid. Now I think about it, it's you get a really good phone for the money. It's probably better than some options out there. Again, this would cost a lot of money in emerging markets, though. It's still high, but you get really it's good quality compared to Samsung even. Samsung is like another premium brand, sort of, that has affordable phones and obviously sells at those level of prices under $500. And so Google's nailed it here. I think really, if you're gonna buy a Pixel 4a, is this the you want simple specs, everyday phone, everyday daily driver, you make gets your calls and work done on it, whatever you do on your phone does it nicely, Instagram goes smoothly, I don't know, it has clean software. You get 3 years of software updates. This is the beautiful thing about the Pixel phones. Well, I mean, if you live in an emerging market, you can get something called the Android One phones. A lot of brands sell Android One phones. Motorola, Nokia, they have Android One phones, and they get equally similar number of software update support and amount of years you get the amount of years you get software updates. 3 years, almost neck and neck. Here you get a guaranteed day one updates. If you the thing is, it's a really solid option. I mean, I'd actually buy this if I was living in the West. And this is the thing I'd want to, stop here at, is that the foray is really good, but I mean, if you live outside of Asia and South America, or the Middle East, really, or Russia, I mean, or China even, I mean, it's a good option really for the money. You get a good phone really, and it's snappy. It's got fast charging. It's got decent battery, and the battery life will be much longer than the 4, Pixel 4. Because of the more efficient chipsets, and obviously it doesn't have to go power that many things compared to the Pixel 4. And you get a solid camera that's topped up by that software, making night mode and portrait mode crystal clean. It's the software that saved it, sort of. Oh, and did I forget to mention the Pixel 4 is 349, $350 for one spec. Which is 120 gigabyte variant. Not bad, really. Good value, though. Probably better than the A71. If assuming that it's not on discounts, it's really, really good. Oh, you want something much faster? There's the Pixel 4a 5G, which I think will be a solid, affordable 5G phone when it comes out later in the year. That's gonna come out late, a few months' time eventually. This is out in the next couple of weeks. This will be available to buy. It's currently on pre-order on the Google store, so definitely check it out. It's really, really nice. And then I think the day when Google announced, as last week when Google showed off the Pixel 4a, they also stated that that Google is working on some 5G phones. So there's a Pixel 5G that'll be launching with the Pixel 5 and a 5G version of the 4a, which is I think really solid commitment from Google that they still want to sell really good phones. And they're not going to give up and back out like most players in the market. So that's really, really cool. So, pretty googly. That's. And also, as I said, good battery. It's got a Google Assistant. It can do a lot. So, solid phone. Definitely check it out if you're shopping around for a cheap phone these days. And you have to live in the West. That's the thing. So, yeah. Onto Huawei. So, since foldable phones started to come out in the market, I think there was an expectation that 2020 was really gonna be the year when foldables would blow up like crazy. Like 5G phones are gonna get cheaper. We're gonna finally see it. Oh my god, it is a $600 foldable phone! Because, economies of scale. But what kind of looks obvious from this is that, I mean, it's hard to make foldables really, and also given what's happening in the world, I would kind of admit that 5G phones have come around quickly and they've gone up in price dramatically, but I think the coronavirus pandemic has really affected foldable development. It sounds overt for me to say that, but it's kind of butted into the development of foldables. I mean, it's going to take a good while before we see competitively priced foldables. I think it's just the manufacturing process. I mean, it's hard to make a foldable. I mean, especially screen to folds, the hinges and stuff. Like, it's not you can't. It's not gonna go en masse quickly enough. So there's that challenge. But I kind of wanted to bring this here. It's kind of a point, because according to a lot of sources, essentially, EVLeaks and the dude behind EVLeaks, Even Blass, and displays analyst Ross Young, they both tweeted about the new Huawei Mate X2. Okay, EVLeaks kind of tweeted out that Huawei isn't releasing a couple of new devices, and already are a lot of nicknames behind it. So there's a new Nova phone coming out. It's codenamed, you'll laugh at it, Jessica Barbie. The new Y9A Franklin, FreeBuds Pro's Mermaid. Tia Watch Fit, and then the Mate X2 is codenamed Teton. Wow, that's really, really creative. Oh, and I kind of forgot. There's an update to this. The Mate 40 Pro is codenamed Noah. Oh, I see. It's gonna be a revolution. that'd be quite interesting. But really, aside from code names, the big discussion point that's come out today really is that display analysts, basically, there are analysts who talk about display manufacturing and panels and yes, it's a thing, guys. You know, the technology industry is massive, so there are people who predict and talk about technology. Ross Young, this guy basically is an analyst for a firm that basically looks up, that basically talks about displays, manufacturing, and all the whole display panel industry. He said that the Mate X 2 will have the same panel size as the original Mate X, 8.03 inches, but it is infolding rather than outfolding. This is what he said. I mean, there's another one, and this is he replied to EV Leaks's code name game, and that was that it kind of confirming what he heard, how he has heard, is that the Mate X2 will basically be infolding like all those Samsung foldables, and the screen will be coming from Samsung. So that's interesting. Seems like Samsung's got the upper hand here. They have all the affordable 4G, sorry, they've got 5G phones. They're affordable. They've got the foldables. The foldables are going down in price themselves. Yikes. It's good time to be at Samsung. De-de-de-de. Here's the interesting point that Ross Young brought up, and that was that the Mate X2 will basically be an infolding display versus an outfolding display, like how the Huawei Mate X has been for a long, long time. The first one and the other one, the previous two, the Mate XS and the Mate X. The screen, basically, if you don't know how it works, is that the foldable phone, there's screen on both ends, but there's one screen on the front that's working. And the idea is you can press a button from the back and it pops out, and you can just fold, you can flip out the phone completely to expand the display, sort of. You can still use that primary smartphone display, but it's time to go all out, playing games or reading books or doing multitasking. You just press a button, it pops out, it's right there. It's not that hard, really, and it still looks stunning. But the thing is that that kind of design is very hard to do. It's kind of difficult and it's hard to scale it up. In fact, I mean, foldables have been out all over the world, really, and that is because okay, fine, it have been available all over the world. But one factor I'd say is that Samsung's foldables, like the Z Flip and then the Z Fold 2, hopefully, that if it's around $1,000-ish, I mean, it's quite affordable. I mean, at around 1 to $1,500, you can get a foldable now for that kind of money. Whereas the Huawei Mate X, it costs around $2,000. It's very expensive. I mean, if you really believe in the foldable technology, if you really believe in the future, you'd be willing to spend that kind of money. You know, see, if you don't, if you can't, and if you don't, if you want to avoid Google Play services, or you can live without Google Play services, that's a hefty investment. So, I mean, Huawei needs to bring that price down really quickly enough. And so I think the economics and also manufacturing problems, it's hard to make a pop out dis it's hard to make out a display where it folds from the outside, sort of, into a full screen. It's quite difficult, really. So instead, so hence Huawei is switching over to the fold-out design, sort of, that's been on Samsung's foldables. And the idea is that basically there is higher sort of yields and supply of it, and the cost would come down dramatically. But obviously, I mean, this story came on top of a video that Mr. Who's the Boss did, and it kind of made a good point about the Mate X versus the Galaxy Fold and the Z Flip, is that the Huawei's design is really nice. It's not, well, durability is questionable, really. I mean, that's up for debate, really, but it's quite practical because you could use that single display and you'd not really have to put extra components to give the smartphone experience, and hence you're v not wasting much, really, compared to the Samsung foldables, really. Over there, you're kind of putting so many extra cameras, it's quite wasteful, and it kind of bumps up the price unless you buy enough cameras or displays to really make up that cost. The invert this folding phone is really nice, but there's a lot of cost to it, really. I mean, you have to add extra, you have to add an outer display, really, and that things cost money, and you got to make back on those devices. So it's it's gonna cost a lot of money, and it's gonna be a, and given how difficult it is to make flexible displays, really, and there are very few component manufacturers who are making foldable displays, it's gonna be a while, as I've mentioned from the, in the beginning, it's gonna be a good while before they have a before you see competitively priced affordables, really. According to the article from Android Authority, they wrote here, Huawei only expects affordable foldables to arrive by 2022. That's basically the by the next World Cup, you'll probably have cheaper foldables. Yikes. I mean, that's harsh. 5G phones have come down in price. The real reason is, is that the chipsets have arrived fast enough. MediaTek, Qualcomm, they flooded the market with so many chipsets. So now manufacturers, even very small timers, have launched 5G phones like HTC. But the thing is, it's all about the chips components, or how quickly the components can be available on the market and how quickly you can buy them. And very few people are making foldable displays, and they're hard. They're hard to make significant amounts of them, and it's quite expensive. Samsung's figured it out, so they're doing it. Okay, if they're able to boost production and make more of it, and they start selling it to other manufacturers, maybe they could make some money on the side. And Samsung actually does make money making components for other manufacturers and selling it to other, yes, you'll be surprised to hear, even though Samsung is a competitor to the iPhone, they make expensive phones like the iPhones, they sell, they make chipset, Apple's chipsets, A-series chipsets, and they also make displays for iPhones. I don't know if they actually do that, and cannot verify that if that's true, but Samsung makes stuff for other manufacturers. So, I mean, if they can make enough foldables, then the price can go down pretty much. So that's the thing, really, about the Mate X2, sort of. It's going to be a while. I think that we'll release this one quick soon enough, but it's going to be a good, it's going to be a good while before you see cheap, affordable phones, because it's very difficult to make displays. So that's the takeaway here. And now we need some tech business news, because it's about the tech business generally, not about new phones. It's a dry spell right now. It's the wind calm before the storm. So in tech business news, and this is a report here. Qualcomm wants the U.S. government wants to get the U.S. government's permission to sell its CPUs, its chipsets to Huawei. Yikes. This story actually was published, but this story, the Wall Street Journal broke it, and I'm reading this off another tech blog, so I'll try to link the actual original Wall Street Journal article in the show notes so you guys can see it. It's behind a paywall, so if you have a Wall Street Journal subscription, go read it. If not, then, you know, just Google it. But most people may not know this. Huawei has basically been sanctioned by the U.S. government. It's been on a origin list, sort of. So it's been banned from using American software and technology. It's been banned from using Google's services. Hence, Huawei phones have had their own app store and stuff, the app gallery, and have their own software, sort of. And while that's kind of slowed Huawei down, apparently, they report that because because Huawei cannot do any more further business with U.S. companies, especially in regards to patents and chipset designs and even chipset assembly, the Mate 40 Pro would be the last phone which would have a Kirin chipset, which is kind of both sad and harsh, kind of. But it depends on how you look at this whole Huawei U.S. drama, sort of, what your take is, sort of. I mean, you might feel happy that, oh, see, Huawei, this is the price they paid for trying to spy, and if you love Huawei, you'd be like, aw, poor Huawei, aw, look at them, they were a superpower from a powerful hardware maker that was crushed by politics. Oh, well, because Huawei, apparently, I think this is to do with an extension, Huawei coding an extension to do further business with U.S. companies. There was like there was a deadline that expired in May, and that meant that whatever supplies Huawei got, chipset wise or patents, They got it, and afterwards it stopped. The trickle went to a few drops, and then it completely stopped. And so now, seeing Qualcomm seeing this situation, that Huawei cannot make Kirin chips, that's it's out of it, sort of. It's gonna switch. It's gonna go to Samsung. It's gonna go to MediaTek to get SoCs. And those companies, if they get a contract from Huawei to put chips on their Mate phones, Y series phones, and P series phones, it's worth billions, because Huawei needs those CPUs, and they're gonna do something about it, really. And so Qualcomm has actually worked with Huawei. A lot of Huawei's Y series phones have been powered by Snapdragon chips. People may not know this. Huawei does use its own SoCs, but it's used Qualcomm chips in places where they cannot put their own chipsets, for obvious reasons. So they've used Qualcomm CPUs. And so now, knowing that if they can work with Huawei completely, and Huawei really is a trusted company for lots of industry players, a lot of professional businesses, really high-level businesses, Huawei is really good, is a professional player sort of, partner sort of. The thing is, if Qualcomm, if they can't make their own chipsets, they'll go to others to get it. Samsung could benefit, I mean, but Qualcomm needs to work with Huawei, sort of. I mean, it could be, it again, and so it's kind of going to the US government's lobbying them to allow, to grant them exemption, sort of, to work with Huawei. I think they would also make a, I mean, I know it's, I mean, I'm trying not to be political here, but I think they're going to put a political point that if they use Qualcomm, if Huawei starts using Qualcomm CPUs, then it's safe and stuff. So I'm sure they probably have those talking points ready. But the thing is that Huawei could make more phones. So, I mean, if Qualcomm could make, could sell chips to Huawei, they could still, Huawei can still keep making phones. So that's interesting, and it's worth a lot of money. Again, according to this article, Qualcomm would lose about $8 billion if they did not get a deal with Huawei soon enough and get a permission sort of to do it. So very interesting situation. Yeah, it's quite interesting. And then moving on, TikTok. We're speaking of Huawei, there's TikTok. Most people may know this. I mean, it's known news really since the last 2 weeks. The U.S. President Donald Trump has threatened a ban on TikTok because it's a Chinese company, pretty much. And so, unless TikTok sort of either ByteDance divest the business, make it a U.S.-based company, or sort of severs its Chinese ties, and now there's a, you know, the time is ticking, sort of, for TikTok to sort of avoid getting banned. So much so that, I mean, the clock is ticking and the pressure is increasing. So much so that now Donald Trump, also President Trump, recently on Thursday, signed an executive order sort of banning any U.S. company, banning U.S. companies from doing business with either ByteDance or Tencent for 45 days. So the pressure is real. It's known that Microsoft acknowledged it in a blog post, because it's quite important, and obviously everyone's curious, sort of, that I mean, they're gonna buy TikTok. So they acknowledge that they've been in talks to buy TikTok's operations in the U.S., Australia, and Canada, and New Zealand, and that they plan to get the deal done by 15 September, hopefully. And then Microsoft said, and then the rumor came through Financial Times, the FT. They said that now Microsoft's looking to buy all of TikTok globally except for China. It's not in China, actually, but the whole global business of TikTok, and that could be lucrative because Microsoft can make a lot of money. And also there could be potentially less. And also I think it was kind of clear that buying just the American or Canadian version of TikTok would be confusing, and how would you communicate with the rest of the other TikTok that's owned by ByteDance? It would be confusing, so Microsoft was like, let's buy all of TikTok. So not surprised, really. I mean, if they can get the whole global TikTok operation, that'd be lucrative. It'd be worth billion, if Microsoft's going to buy it, it will be worth $50 billion. TikTok's worth $50 billion. And also, TikTok, I mean, this needs to be done, sort of. That's another thing, point here. So it's quite an intense tech story going on. The TikTok needs to be sold off to a US entity or else it'll get banned. And also, really, as much as TikTok's from China, it's really an American institution now. A lot of users in the US, a lot of American investors, a lot of American VCs got on ByteDance, really, raising, boosting valuations of ByteDance to billions. It was American VCs, VCs in the hood, sorry, in the valley, who've made ByteDance the force they are today. So, I mean, Microsoft needs to buy it as soon as they can. I mean, there's a deadline, 15 September. But now, Twitter wants to buy TikTok. That's interesting. Also, the Wall Street Journal reported that Twitter is looking to buy TikTok. They've been talking with ByteDance to pursue a deal to buy TikTok's U.S. operations. There's no mention that they want to buy the global version of TikTok, but they're looking to buy the U.S. version. Man, it's getting tense. Hopefully, a deal is settled by 15 September. I'll link the article from the Wall Street Journal. It's quite interesting. It's an interesting situation, really. I mean, interesting times, really. The clock is ticking with TikTok. So Twitter wants to buy TikTok. That's interesting. So yeah, moving on to other tech business news. Amazon wants to turn shopping malls into fulfillment centers. I'm going to be quick with this one. So again, Wall Street Journal, I mean, it's good at tech reporting. They reported that Amazon's been talking probably since the pandemic, before the pandemic really, with Simon Property Group, that they've been looking to buy up mall space in some of Simon's shopping malls, or some of the space that was left out by JCPenney and Sears, since they all bankrupted, sort of, those short stores they've shuttered, and since there was empty spaces, really. And so this massive mall giant, Simon Property Group, really the biggest mall owner in America, they've been looking to sell some of that retail space, that GLA, really, to Amazon. And this is a report, so it's interesting, really. I mean, Amazon's looking to buy into mall space. They've actually bought some, you know, dilapidated malls, really, to build out warehouses. So it's quite interesting with the power of e-commerce, really. I mean, it's malls are dead, really. E-commerce is growing, so so much so that America's biggest mall property owner is looking to sell off literal space that it could give to another lucrative tenant, to Amazon. I mean, it's quite interesting. I don't know if this is going to go through, really, given COVID-19, but there's a lot of demand. Amazon would probably close this deal. Who knows, this might be done already. It's just in the wings, really. It reminded me of another story I read today, just today. It was in The Guardian, and that was that the British supermarket chain John Lewis, or Waitrose, really, John Lewis, and it's a department store, sorry. And they were saying, and their executives were talking about how they want to turn some of their unused stores that are of no use, they're losing money on. They're gonna shut some stores, but they have ideas to turn them into affordable housing. I mean, if you live in the UK, shout out to my British viewers. If you live in Britain, you will know there's been a problem about affordable housing for a couple of years now. It's hard to get a cheap house to live in, to call a humble abode, really. The cheapest house is a couple of million quid, so it's been a real problem. Brick and mortar retail has also been on decline in England, like in the US, because online shopping is blowing up. In the UK also, and the British High Street, as it tends to be known, has suffered a lot because of that Amazon really reaching more and more British consumers, really, and getting an increasing share of British spending, really. It's quite interesting what retail property folks having retail property are thinking of. I mean, it's unused retail space, extra stores, and the idea that they're going to shut them off, they're going to turn them into office space, co-working spaces, warehouse space for e-commerce. They're getting quite creative. It's obvious e-commerce has become big, and also that it's a sign of a change of times. Interesting times. I'll link the Guardian article in the in the show notes. You go check that out if you're interested. And finally, this kind of went all. It just came in the weekend, sort of. So, and this one was revealed by a lot of tech sites, and that was a someone bought an Xbox controller, and it confirmed something. Now the person bought the second new Xbox controller looked a bit new, and on the corner, it said Xbox Series X and Xbox Series S. And that confirms Xbox Series S is coming. That's interesting. So this is according to The Verge and Engadget. Both had reported it that there was that I'm bringing this up. There's someone called Zax S. He bought a control one of those newer Xbox controllers, and on the side of the packaging, it stated it was said it was designed for Windows 10 and Xbox Series X and Xbox Series S, which means that's confirmed. It's up and it's going to be coming out soon. And then Engadget kind of went on further, stating that Xbox Series S is coming. It actually will come on December 12th, and it confirms everything we've been hearing all along. It'll be designed for full HD gaming, not for 4K. It will do 1080p gaming like the Xbox One S. It'll have 7.5 gigabytes of RAM. It'll have a much slower processor than the one in the Series S. And again, The Verge broke this, and they were saying that it might be part of the Xbox All Access plan. Actually, most people don't know this really. Microsoft is an offering sort of a subscription program, sort of, where you can get an Xbox console, Xbox Live Gold, Xbox Live Gold, and Game Pass Ultimate for a single price, like around 20, $30. And so they kind of stopped it for because the upcoming Xboxes were coming, and now they're planning to launch it again, relaunch it, this time for the Series S and hopefully the Series X. And so basically, they're planning to offer the Series S console and the and Game Pass Ultimate for a single price, which I think will be really cool. Guys, I mean, there's gonna be a cheaper Xbox. I'm just saying, they're not gonna keep selling you the Xbox Series X. They're gonna be a cheaper one because there's a lot of people who want to buy that juicy Xbox console. A lot of good games, Halo Infinite. Forza Motorsport, some really good games, Gears 5, and also the game streaming feature. It'll work really well on, obviously, on the Xbox console out of the gate. So fun times ahead. So that was our episode. I mean, that's all we got. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast if you're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts, really. Thank you for listening. Stay safe, stay at home if you can, and wear a mask. All right, bye, ciao. See you in the next episode. That'll be on Wednesday, okay? Ciao.